Hey everyone, I'm Morgan DeBon, a passionate entrepreneur and life advisor. With the Journey Podcast, you'll discover that success isn't about the destination, it's about the journey. I'm sharing stories of amazing people who've taken control of their lives. Join me on my own journey to discover the secret sauce behind reaching success with permission from no one else. Welcome back to the Journey Podcast. I am so excited today because I have a woman here who I deeply admire, Courtney Adeyele. We are going to talk about all things being a boss, being a serial entrepreneur, and balancing it all. I've known of Courtney for like 7+ years at this point, almost maybe 10 years. I was an Instagram follow of hers. If you follow Courtney, you know, this woman does not play with her Instagram, okay? She is on lives all the time. Before people were really doing like lives, I feel like Courtney was someone who was always taking advantage of being an early adapter of new features. She has an incredible girl gang of other female entrepreneurs that she collaborates with all the time. She has an incredible conference and experience. She also is the founder of Maine's Choice, which I'm sure you're very familiar with, which she has exited that business. So we're going to get into how acquisitions work, and because her acquisition was a little bit different than what I've talked about before in terms of a venture capital exit. It was a private equity exit. So we're going to get into that and all of the new things that she's working on in her portfolio. So Courtney, welcome to the Journey Podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So many things. I feel like I just was like, what Lord child, how did you got 3 kids?
Yes. Husband 4.
Yes. And your husband. Right. That's right. So first, let's just walk through your previous business and the founding of the business. How long did you have Maine Choice before you exited it?
Started in 2013 and did an exit in 2019. So
6 years.
Yes. Yes.
And that was a fast flip.
It was.
You know, most people aim for that kind of flip, but very few people are actually able to do that. When you started the business, were you planning on selling or were you building it to sell?
No, definitely a huge difference of mentality than today. I think, you know, on our business journey, as we develop, we learn so much. A lot of times when we start a business is out of pure passion. So what does that next process look like? We never sometimes, you know, as entrepreneurs, think about that ahead of time. So it's something that comes much later, but starting it, definitely not. I always like to tell the story when my banker, first question he asked me, like, well, when are you selling the company? And I'm like, never. Like, you know, like, why are you asking me? I was like so offended when he asked me that. But no intentions, definitely when getting started.
Yeah, I think that's something that is probably true for most entrepreneurs, right? It's like you don't build to sell. Building to sell is kind of a recipe to fail because you have to really be in it.
Yes and no. I mean, I'm in a different place now, so I could probably say that now.
Different. First-time entrepreneur building this out, I don't think that would. My opinion is that would not work out for them. But yeah, second time around, you know the game.
Right, for sure.
For sure. And tell me a little bit about how Maine Choice was set up. Like, how big were you guys in terms of like staff and distribution? You know, I'm as familiar with the brand because I used it and it was in Sally's, you know. Where else were you guys distributed?
Basically all retailers from Walmart to Target, Sally's, all grocery, all, you know, pharmacy, CVS and Walmart's, Walgreens of the world. So we were in over 60,000 stores across the United States. And we actually did that in like in about, 2 years when we actually went into retail. But we just got to that point where we're about to really hit international. So no, didn't necessarily get that far just yet, but I want to do an exit before we really kind of saturated from an international perspective. We did some things in Canada, a few other places, but not necessarily where it is now or could be.
Mm-hmm. And tell me a little bit about your journey as like becoming the CEO of a company that was really in a position to be acquired. You know, one of the things that I talk to a lot of entrepreneurs about is you can run a business for yourself and your employees and also it not really be in a place to be bought. You know, you have to have profit. You have to have financials that have been audited. Like it is actually an entire journey in itself to position to be able to receive the opportunities that were coming your way. What was that process like for you? Were you already like thinking that way naturally, or did you have to do some sort of restructuring and cleanup to get there?
No, I think only thing we had to do was, you know, not necessarily any restructuring. I would probably say some cleanup because, you know, when you start a company, last thing you're thinking about is, you know, making sure all the ducks is in a row from a financial perspective. You're so interested in getting the product out to the customer, and just really keeping up with the growth. So that's kind of how it started. So definitely a lengthy process. And I always say, even if you're not interested in selling your company should still be built to be sellable. You know what I mean? So, and that is something I guess just came to me naturally when it came to our margins and things of that nature that, again, I don't have a business background. So I just thank God that I did things the right way from the start, because there was no way we could have sold that company in 6 years, you know, bootstrapped, you know, from home. Like literally that meant I had to do everything right from the, you know, the trademarks, from the formulas, like all of that stuff. So for me, it's just second nature to do business right. Even if I don't know totally what I'm doing, I know at least how to do the right things. I know I have to have my EIN. I know I have to have all my, you know, my documentation. And thank God that we did. You know, no one told me what a margin was or what it should be. I kind of went on what I felt it should have been. Like, this is what I should sell it for, a product, you know. But I just thank God for that, that insight, because it would have been a grueling process. So it was already grueling. You know, you go through acquisition period. And then to, again, like a short, quote unquote, period of time, you definitely had to have your ducks in a row. So God was on our side.
I feel like what you're talking about, it can't be taken for granted. I mean, you're saying it so casually, but it's actually very rare for a business owner from the beginning to set things up the right way. I remember when I first started Blavity, I was like, it doesn't matter if I set this up right, because if I do, then I got a first, if somebody is telling me I'm setting it up wrong, then I have a first world problem, which is that somebody actually cares. Like, you know, I remember our first, when we first started raising money, I wrote our first like deal terms. Like I downloaded some random thing off of like 500 startups or Y Combinator, and I edited it myself because I was like, I would refuse to pay $500 an hour for a lawyer and all their associates. It's really like probably $2,000 an hour for some of the law firms we're working with. I was like, this is crazy. I don't have any money. Like, I was trying to raise money. So how is this supposed to work? Like, I did not understand how the system worked at all. And I made that mistake. That was a $200,000 mistake. Once we got bigger, I had to go back and clean up so many things. It cost me so much more. So, you know, word to the wise, do it the right way the first time.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. And then bookkeeping, you know what I mean? That's, you know, that's definitely our weakness. So that's for sure was, you know, our weakness for sure. Bookkeeping. So things like that, I would say we had literally, there was like, Courtney, like, this is like the dinosaur ages. So we had like, you know, files and files of things. Oh, no. Like, where is the digital stuff? And they're like, and one thing my accountant said, he was like, Courtney, although this is a dinosaur system, he was like, you have a system. He was like, so at least let me thank you for that. He was like, it's outdated, you know, but even, you know, when you come to a software, it's really only as good as you use it. You know what I mean? Like, that's so right. People are like, oh, what is this magic software? Any, if you just use it, like any of them will be way better than not keeping track of what you're doing.
I agree.
You know? So some of the things I know I probably got hit for is like, you know, of course, in the beginning, when you're creating a company, there were so many things I would buy personally, like with my own money. And to be able to go back 6 years and say that this was a business expense, they're like, prove it. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Like, show me this was a business spend. And, you know, going to Walmart and, you know, setting up a trade show, they're like, okay, this receipt says Walmart. You know what I mean? Like, show me.
You're like, well, I went to Walmart.
So you got the receipt, but, you know, going back, just going through like bank accounts, just trying to build some type of something, you know, again, it's the finances that we definitely get hit with for sure.
Yeah, 100%. And I did the same thing because I didn't even pay myself. So I was just living, you know, I was like, it's my money. It's my bank account. I'm paying all the people. What you talk about?
I did at the end.
There was like a year, was it year three or four? I gave myself a loan. I was like, okay, I gotta track this a little bit better. So I gave the company a loan from myself, mm-hmm. so that at least I could pay myself back something.
Right, you know, right.
Versus it just gets really messy. So again, do not do what we did, y'all.
No.
Do not commingle funds. Set up a separate bank account, please.
And that's what just one attorney, one of my trust attorneys, she said, worst case scenario. She said, even if it's not like a business account, just have a separate account.
Yes.
She was like, that would just make everybody's job so much easier. So even if it's your second account that you're not doing anything but business transactions, she was like, that's a lot better than just using your personal account that you have personal and business things coming out of. So
that's right.
I was like, that's true too.
So y'all hear it from us. You do not want to be sitting there going line item by line item in the spreadsheet, because we have done it where you have to categorize your entire life for many,
many years. I've been audited. So you don't want to do that.
You don't want these problems. You don't want these problems. Okay. So you weren't necessarily building to sell. You had an incredible business. It was scaling. I mean, most importantly, your brand was incredible. I mean, it was everywhere. You are a brand building like genius for sure. You know, and I mean that. I literally mean that, because it is not easy to do what you've done, bootstrapped, key. All these consumer, direct-to-consumer brands that we see all over the place in Sephora and Target, these are all venture-backed D2C brands that have scaled at that time frame that you just talked about. Those are all venture-backed, you know, and many of them certainly don't look like us.
Yeah.
So you were pitching retailers, you know, going to the buyers, doing the entire process from scratch. I just have to say, like,
literally,
that's insane.
Presentations and all, like, literally.
Yeah.
PowerPoint.
From scratch. Like, you didn't go to and work at Walmart and then become a buyer and then spin off. Like, you just did it. And that takes a lot of courage. So I'm curious, how then did you emotionally just start to detach yourself from your business when you decided that it was time to sell? Because this really was such a huge part of your life, you know? And I feel like it must've been really hard.
It wasn't, you know? No. And again, one thing about me, you know, I'm being very transparent. Mm-hmm. Anything outside of my family, I'm a work hard, I'm a hard worker, but I don't take too much stuff in because I feel like we already have enough. Although it's a company that I started, you know, it was still a career. It was still a line of work that I was doing. Mm-hmm. So I'm not married to anything but my husband and my children, to be very transparent. Mm-hmm. Wherever I decide to put my time, I'm going to give it my all. So even when I was working at a 9-to-5, you couldn't tell me I didn't own the place. Like, that's how much my all I'm going to give to whatever it is I'm doing. So mm-hmm. while on the outside, people may think, oh my God, it's so hard to detach. It's not. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to give anything 100%. But at mm-hmm. the same time, understanding that this is a stepping stone. Like, I don't want this to be my only one and only business. I think for me, it was a stepping stone. So mm-hmm. now I have the ability to do something even greater. Mm-hmm. And if you're so attached to something, you know, you can't have these big goals and dreams, yet you're so attached to some things that you may need to let go of to get to your next level. Mm. So for me, I'm going to give it my all, but I'm not going to say that I can't make a detachment from, you know, a project that I'm working on.
I love that. It's something that I've struggled with. There was a time when I'd be walking down the street in San Francisco and someone would say, hey, Blavity, and I would turn around because mm-hmm. that's how attached it was to my identity. I had to work on that quite a bit to detach. Like, Blavity is a company mm-hmm. and I'm grateful for it. I mm-hmm. ride or die for it. I eat, sleep, breathe it.
Oh, sure.
However,
yeah,
it's not a person.
Yeah. I'm a ride. I'm a, you know, do whatever I have to do, you know, to make it happen. But I, you know, I do think there's great things that's out there. And I do believe, you know, we are exposed to something for even greater. Mm-hmm. And I just hate to miss those opportunities because we don't have a clear sight, you know what I mean, of what the potential could be. And I think mm-hmm. a lot of us are capable for even greater, you know, and this is why sometimes you see that second go round, third go round of people starting that built to sell model, because mm-hmm. it's like, okay, I have a blueprint. Like, I can do this thing again. You know what I mean? And what does that look like? What is that legacy? May not be that first business. It may be the second. It may be the third, you know? Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, the asset is you. right? Like, it's your brain, it's your work ethic. So tell me about the private equity deal in terms of, like, what does private equity mean for those people who are listening in? Private equity is very different than venture capital. Mm-hmm. A private equity typically comes in and they want to own 100% or be the majority shareholder. Some mm-hmm. people do minority, but typically it's majority or all. And, you know, they're known to be in the world as pretty savage. You know, a lot of mm-hmm. private equity gets a bad rep. Part of it is well-deserved. So maybe mm-hmm. a bad rep, but well-deserved because mm-hmm. they're really margin-focused. Mm-hmm. They don't buy businesses that they don't think can improve in margin, that they don't think can scale. I mean, they're not mm-hmm. in this for charity. Like, right, it's right. for capitalism.
For sure. You know? Yeah. So for me, going through the process, you know, when I first went through just kind of getting like, what is the evaluation, you know, of my company, I really mm-hmm. didn't have, like I said, a desire to even sell it. That mm-hmm. was not on my brain. I just wanted mm-hmm. to know, was it even profitable? What is it worth? And then while you go through this process, you will have all kind of people giving you options. Some mm-hmm. people to say, well, Courtney, you know, we want 40%. We want this, you know, we want you to stick around. But the interesting thing about it, by the time I got to the point that it was like, okay, this is how much it's worth, this is how much you could sell it for, I really wasn't trying to hear the ones who wanted to, you know, partner and say, you know, you have 60%. I just felt like at that point, it's like I'm either all in or I'm all out.
That's right.
You know, I just didn't feel like that was the company to be halfway in with. I just didn't. It's mm-hmm. either I'm going to have total control or I'm going to do a total sale. Mm-hmm. So at that time, like I said, we got so many offers and my mind was pretty made up. I was like, okay, it's either I'm in or I'm out. So if we're going to sell it, let's sell it. But I don't feel like doing like the partnership thing right now. I just didn't feel like it. So
and when you see that go down, not so great, right?
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. Being that then it's also a company that was built out of passion. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Courtney blood went through the veins of that company. So for me, I'm like, if it don't go down right, I just don't want to be a part of it. You know what I mean? Like, not saying that it was or if it wasn't, are you going to grow? Are you not? I didn't know, but I just really didn't want to take that chance. If it didn't go right, it's like, okay, I'm not a part of it. You know what I mean? So I had to make a tough decision, you know, but again, with that particular brand, it was like either I'm all out or I'm all in.
Now let's take a quick break from our sponsor. When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the right tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. LinkedIn has a vast network of more than a billion professionals, which makes it the best place to hire. It gives you access to professionals you literally can't find anywhere else, and it does all of that while making the process easy and intuitive. I use LinkedIn every single time when I'm hiring candidates for Blavity and for Devon & Co., and I consistently find the top people who are right for our company's roles. Hiring is so much easier when you have that many quality candidates to source from. It's so easy, in fact, that 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. So head over to LinkedIn to post your job for free on linkedin.com/divine. That's linkedin.com/divine to post your job for free. Terms and conditions, of course, apply. Thanks, LinkedIn. You've done the hard part. You've created your business, taking the leap to believe in yourself and your vision. But if you want to make money doing what you love, you need to grow. And to do that, you need a marketing strategy. There's a recent episode of a great podcast called This is Small Business that talks all about marketing strategies. In this episode, you'll learn how to identify your target customer, where to find them, and which marketing channels to focus on so you're making the most of your budget, and how to use data to set goals. This is Small Business, an original podcast from Amazon, answers so many of these questions. Whether you're dreaming of starting your business, looking to take a side hustle full time, or maybe you're a few years in and you're ready to scale, this show covers it all. Coming up this month on the show, you'll learn how to grow your email list from Jenna Kutcher, and you'll get a step-by-step guide for accelerating your business growth with my favorite, Amy Porterfield. Make sure to follow This is Small Business on Apple Podcasts or Spotify so you don't miss those fantastic episodes. And big thanks to This is Small Business for sponsoring the Journey podcast by Morgan Taban. What is your advice for someone who's getting opportunities and someone that aren't necessarily the pathway that they thought they were destined to be? So like they get those emails from investors or private equity people, they get those things. And you're like, I wasn't really thinking about this. And it's intimidating. It's overwhelming.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you mean offers? You mean like offers before? The funny thing is I was getting offers so many years, even before we sold, I just never took them seriously. And it was like a few big contenders who, you know, when I went through the process, and I'm like, I think I got an email from you guys. One of them was like, I've been trying to contact you for years, Courtney. I was like, girl, I didn't listen. I'm like, I'm thinking you randomly email. Exactly. I'm like, I'm not, you know, exactly. I just thought it was a, you know, but I was like, it's like, wow. Like, you know, these people really have been around for some years trying to get in contact with me. But I think at the end of the day, when it comes to any deal, you know, you want to make sure you're getting what you want out of it. You know what I mean? Whatever that may be is one of the main things. Also, when you are a product type of brand, it was also important to me to sell to a company who did not have an interest in changing the formula. Now, you know, when you go to certain brands, it's not even an option if they're going, that's what they do. Like,
yes,
they are a manufacturer. So the people who I sell to, that's not their history. Like, their thing is growing the brand. They're not going to fix something that's not broken. But again, that was important to me as well, because I'm like, I, you know, love and appreciate, you know, all the people who were there who helped to grow the company, the customers that we had. And I just didn't want to see that change. So that was something else that was important for me as well, too, at the time.
Yeah. Let's switch gears. You sell the company and, you know, news goes public. I don't feel like the Black community really like went in the same way that they've done more recently. Did you feel like you got good support from your customers?
It was a year before people knew that I sold the company.
Oh, that was smart.
It was a year.
That was so smart enough.
Yeah, I didn't feel it as if it was
like, it's done.
Yeah, it was a whole year later. And it wasn't until they started making like those lists of, you know, who owns what. Mm-hmm. And like I always say, the crazy part about it is even the companies that they had on the list as Black owned, I'm like, they're not. You know what I mean? We know what goes on behind closed doors. You know, people don't understand when you take dollars and you already given up 50%. Like, I'm not putting anybody business out there, but I'm like, at the end of the day,
people can look it up.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so it wasn't until a year later, because again, like for me, the focus, that wasn't the focus. Mm-hmm. I wanted to make sure, you know, that the company was still thriving, make sure that nothing is changing. Like I wanted to make sure everything was still what it's supposed to be. So I personally just chose not to focus on that piece. But once they did find out, no, it wasn't the support, not the support at all. You know, when we look at other communities, you know, yeah, we are like, high five, you just did like, you know, the unthinkable. I was like in my 30s selling the company after 6 years. Like, we made history. Like, I literally was down multicultural and general market by myself without a large company.
Icon.
Exactly. So it was so much, but I didn't take it to heart because I felt like a lot of times we are, you know, we're built from passion, you know, our community. And sometimes we just don't know. So I wouldn't penalize someone for not necessarily knowing. So I never took it personal like that.
No, we can't take it personal, but there is a challenge to me that we have such a deficit mindset of like, you know, the argument is typically, well, this is the only one. And now the people who are the best are selling. And like, that just sucks for us. We can't have anything. Why can't Black people keep anything? You know, why can't we sell to other Black people? And I'm like, well, first of all, to sell to other Black people, you need people who have 10x the value that you have. Mm-hmm. These are going to be the people who buy the businesses of the future. You know, we're going to build the generation, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's only, I can count like 15 Black billionaires in America, right? Most of which are athletes and like entertainers.
Exactly.
You cannot count white billionaires on your hands, okay? fingers in your toes. Like, I've been in rooms with 10 white billionaires.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh yeah, like the founder of Twitter's over here, the founder of Salesforce, the co-founder of Apple, like the person who was the number two employee of PayPal. These are, you know, like, bro.
Yeah.
That's where we need to be.
Yeah. And then I think that's the toughest part. It's definitely not the personal, taking it personal, but it's more or less like the not knowing. Like you said, the deficit. Like, okay, well, how do we get educated? How do we find out this information? How do we, you know, and it's by, you know, doing things like this and people who actually care. And this is why, you know, during the pandemic, I went live every day.
Hey.
Because I felt like there's not many people in our community that we can call and say, girl, you sold a company before? Like, how did you do it? I got some questions. Like, mm-hmm. I don't even have many people to call who have sold a company. So mm-hmm. I wanted to put myself out there. Like, mm-hmm. what questions do you have? Like, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, ask. And I'm going to give you the most straight up answer that I can. Because if I don't do it, then who will? You know what I mean? Like, everybody else who have sold something, they're not about to get on live and answer anybody's questions.
Not the old generation.
Yeah, you know, but for me, like I said, I appreciate the journey and I appreciate my customers because I have the same consumer. You know, I listen, one product may be hair care, the next product is skin, but it's the same girl. You know what I mean? Right. So I would never turn my back on the community because of a, you know, deficit that we have, you know, within our community. So,
mm-hmm. yeah, it's a really interesting dynamic that I'm happy that we're seeing more of our peers exit their businesses, even if there's an emotional and mental toll that I know that they go through when mm-hmm. it's, you know, all the comments on social. But in 10 years, we're going to look back and those are going to be the women and men who are building and financing the next generation because they're going to have the assets. And you all have the balance sheet to be able to be more flexible and more innovative and take more risk, you know? Right. So anyone listening in, be nice. The next time a Black person sells their business, celebrate them. Don't add to their trauma and their stress. Like, trust me, they're stressed enough.
And then, you know, the crazy thing that we don't think about is, but we do see this in other, you know, communities, you know, we'll sell a company and people like, that's the end of it. I'm like, don't you know I can do the same thing? You know what I mean? And you see that. We've seen it, but, you know, we don't get a chance to really see it within our community. I'm like, do you know I can turn around and do whatever it is I want to do?
Exactly.
And when you know that, you will move a little bit different and you will feel a little bit different. So
I 100% agree. If Blavity was gone tomorrow, would it be terrible? Yes. Could I build something else? Absolutely.
Right. Exactly. You know. And I used to put that in my presentation, my self presentation. I have intangible value. This is the mm-hmm. piece that you guys can't even put a value on. And I make sure I always close my presentation with that. This is what I have to offer. I'm bringing me to the table.
Sure. So I'd be like, you can't have me.
Exactly. So when I'm gone.
Yeah, I'm gone. Okay. So now you have an incredible new set of businesses. Ovali is set up as a holding company. Tell me a little bit about what you're doing now. You know, I've got the popcorn. I've got the coffee mugs. I have pink hat. Because I used to join your coffee chats in the morning. And also hot chocolate. I feel like I've had hot chocolate mm-hmm. at one point. Tell me a little bit about your current business.
So after the main choice, after I sold the main choice, I started building brands. And I felt like, you know, knowing the arc when God said, just build, right? Mm-hmm. So I was building brands. And my plan was to take these brands in retail. So I, you know, set with the coffee buyer. I set with, you know, the feminine hygiene buyer. So we got to a point where everybody was like, okay, I want to take this product in. I want to take this brand in. And it wasn't until like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, I was woke up. God woke me up and he was like, Courtney, I want you to do something different. I want you to take all of these brands, put them under one brand mm-hmm. And start a social selling company. Mm-hmm. Now I know at the time, nothing about social selling, nothing about direct selling, nothing, none of it. Like never been to a Mary Kay meeting, never, nothing. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, oh my God, like, why did I just get hit? I mean, with a clear vision, it was like, you're doing it. Like you're doing these conferences, mm-hmm. you're mentoring all of these people. You mm-hmm. don't want to be in one category. You know what I mean? Like, so you're doing it. You just don't have it organized. So literally that next day I got to studying. Put mm-hmm. my, you know, computer out and just started really researching what does it take to create a direct selling company. And basically what that means is I don't partner with retailers right now. All of my products are sold through people. Mm-hmm. And the people who are selling my products are my historical customers. Mm-hmm. So all of these customers that I have built over the last 10 years are people who are now selling the products. And I will always get people writing in and say, Courtney, I told my mom about your product. They're using it. I told my sister they're using it. And I used to feel kind of bad. Like, dang, how do I compensate? I'm like, do I do like an affiliate program? Like what? So, you know, then doing a lot more research with this model, our community is just so late to the party. You know, sometimes we kind of feel like, oh, we've heard something negative about it. So we don't do it versus saying, especially in the United States, this is the one thing that I learned in the world, but especially in the United States. If there's an industry that is so regulated, it's for a reason.
Mm.
And 9 out of 10, it's those industries who have the ability to make ridiculous amounts of money. So why is direct selling such a cliche? Like, why has it gotten such a bad name? So, you know, again, I'm the type of person, instead of shying away from it, I'm going to dig.
What's going on in here?
Yes. I'm like, Avon and Mary Kay did like 6-7 billion last year. Who even support these companies still? So I'm looking and I'm like, okay.
The suburban mom.
Yeah, I got it. But there's so, and when I say now, we have built a community of mostly women, men too. But mm-hmm. you know, I'm hugely passionate, you know, about women.
Yes.
Who has came and said, Courtney, we're going to do this thing with you. Now we have thousands of people out there. You know, we pay weekly, we pay mm-hmm. monthly. So now when I'm revenue sharing, instead of doing that with retailers, I'm doing it with people. And that's we right. pay every week. So although that check is getting bigger and bigger as we grow, but all I can say, I know where it's going. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I know it's going to households for sure. It's not just going to, and I appreciate, you know, even the retail relationship, but now like the mission is different now. My mission is different. So it's not just about me, but I remember all the customers who built Domain Choice. I remember, I see them every day. I'm on live with them every day. Now to be with them and them saying, Courtney, I was in a hotel. Now my kid's in private school because I partnered with you.
Wow.
Like, this is life changing. And this is on a totally different level.
Yeah. I think that to your point, there's a lot of business models that get a bad rep, and because mm-hmm. some people can abuse them. But if you have a mission-driven, purpose-driven framework, then there's a benefit to it, right? Mm-hmm. So like, I would, just to be clear for those who aren't familiar, you know, what Courtney's really talking about is the people who sell the products are people who are work for her as a part of their own, being their own business owners effectively, mm-hmm. right? And in previous worlds, that has been looked at as a multi-level marketing scheme from a negative perspective. Mm-hmm. But in this case, the reason why, you know, I think it's really interesting, and I've watched the stories that you've shared, I've watched the comments. I mean, you've been doing this now for many years, three, four years at this point, right?
Actually, a year and a half.
Oh, you switched the model.
Yeah, switched the model.
And then I think you hired a CEO, or you hired some woman to be a leader. Yeah, that's what I think started me saying, what is going on over here? Mm-hmm. And I think that what I've seen, though, is that our community is naturally very entrepreneurial, to your point. So that's one. Two, our community is also very loud about things we love.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So we're already indoctrinated into the behavior of naturally sharing with our friends, our mothers, our everybody, what we're buying. We got something to say. You might have 10 followers, but you're going to share what you share.
Yes, if you search, you love it.
You know, and I'm seeing that with more matcha, with my matcha brand. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm like, who are these random people? But they're like, I love it. And they every morning they make their matcha and they tag it.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not making any money from that.
Right.
So affiliate marketing is something that is huge in the universe, but not something that we always feel entitled to say, well, you know, let me go ahead and put up my link in my shop and my store and do it my way, because I'm going to do it naturally anyway. So let me get some of this equity and ownership and this cash. So, you know, I think it's a model that we should be asking more companies to consider if we're going to be super fans and help build these businesses.
Yes. And like I said, even like this taking a deep dive, you know, there's no other industry that has built so many millionaires who had no background. So I'm like, why is this industry so scrutinized? Then I'm looking, I'm like, oh, it's because it's encouraging 1099s versus W-2s. You know, we are built on we are a W-2 country. And anything outside of that is like, wait a minute, you know? So again, just seeing what has come out of it, and seeing what we can do, what's the white space for us? Like, how can we make it better? Like, what can we do differently to make this, you know, something that's for us, by us? And like I said, you know, just really just thankful that we've had the success that we've had thus far, just with a year and a half.
It's incredible.
Remodeling out the gate. So.
And how do you source your products? I mean, I'm assuming you had a lot of experience doing this Domain Choice, but this is a whole different set of categories. Are you going to China and doing the whole thing, or like
how I'm still doing it, still doing it myself. So everything that's
you're doing it yourself, Courtney.
You're still doing it myself. I know.
I can't with you.
I know. So yes, still doing it myself. So of course, you know, my thing is to partner with the best of the best. And you know, that used to be something I get even with the main tourists, like, well, who do you manufacture with? Like, you know, how do you decide? Well, I decide by who's the best. Because I don't want to put anything less out. And whatever that is, that's who I'm going to consider. You have to be the best of the best. So, you know, if it's coffee, yeah, I'm going to Seattle. I'm seeing who can manufacture the best there. You know, these are new industries for me. So while your reputation can make you, it can also break you, you know, and we're known to, if I release something, they're going to stand by it. You know, I'm going to stand by it. I have to be able to put my stamp of approval on it, you know, because like I said, it can make you, but it can break you too. So
with More Matcha, I released that like a few months ago. It's a matcha product, just one SKU. It's matcha and ashwagandha. It took me over a year to get it done because the matcha leaves come from Japan and matcha is only grown during a specific season. And so if you want the best matcha, you need the freshest leaves, which means you got to hit it at the right time with the order. And I wasn't trying to order like 10,000, you know,
right.
And right. Like, you've made that mistake before where you just sit on inventory and you're like, what have I done?
I know.
But now we're at this interesting moment where the product is moving really well. Like, people love it. We're getting recurring purchases, which to me is always the, do people love it? It's like, well, did you order it again? Did you use it up and buy it again? It's a daily use product. So you should. I should see a return. But now I'm at this point where should I buy more product, right? Because I don't want to run out. It's cyclical in how I need to buy it. Should we consider a complementary product, right? So when you have your matcha, you need a cup, you need vanilla syrup, you need, you know, the whisk, you know, there's all these different things. Or should I go even more complementary, like you're in your morning routine, let's now give you a collagen gummy. Yeah, I'm just curious what framework or thought process you use to evaluate how you go and complement some of the products and your serve your customer.
Definitely. So we will start making things that will complement like one of our main products. So when I started Cool Coffee Click, I started with the one SKU, the one coffee. And, you know, I could launch with different flavors, all that good stuff. But I love the grow as you go model. Like, even still to this day, I don't want to dump a lot of money and inventory, you know, into something that, you know, I'm just trying to see if this is something I want to do. So I would say definitely look at what can either complement it, but what can kind of get us caught up a little bit when it comes to the things that this just isn't my area. So this is, say, for instance, like the syrup, it may not make sense from a cost perspective. Like, do I even invest in that? Because financial wise, I'm dumping a lot of inventory in it, and what's the most that I can sell it for? You know what I mean? But it's easy. It's easier for us to do because it's like, oh, I want you to have, you know, everything, and people are asking for it. And you got to be real careful when people are asking for things, because a customer going to always ask for something. And you can go out there and say, okay, I got it now. And it's like crickets. You know what I mean? So
where are y'all at though?
Exactly. So
that's why I put on my YouTube channel. People are like, you need a YouTube channel. I built the YouTube channel. Where y'all at?
Listen, I tell people, don't listen to what people tell you what to do. You know what I mean? You have to make that next move when you're ready to. I come up with a pink cup. I want a red cup. I got the red cup. I want the blue. But did you even buy the red cup yet? You know? So I would definitely say, you know, look at your category first and say, well, what else can I do in this category that could demand, you know, a certain price point? Because that makes a big difference too. Sometimes the margins, you know, it just doesn't make sense. So let's say even a popcorn for us, it really didn't make sense in this model. Like, I could not get this thing to fit. You know what I mean? And my people are like, oh my God, I love it. It may be something I bring back, but I can't say I can work it in this model. It's just, you just can't, you know what I mean? So you have to like stick to those products that's making sense, you know, that helps with your growth as well as being complementary to what you have. So,
I feel that. And in other words, you know, you got to look at the margin. The margin matters, especially if you're sharing the margin.
Yes.
You know, so syrup might be something everybody wants to buy, but it just may not be worth the energy.
And that's the thing. And it, you know, like I said, and I'm, again, when I'm giving you things that I've been through, you know what I mean? I've done it. And I'm like, why did I do that? You know, and it was so funny because I was this guy that crossed my path, was like a billionaire. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, listen, I said, I can't have you cross my path without you giving me some type of like mini masterclass type of thing, right? So he just like ran through all of my brands real quick, like, you know, what you making on this one? Well, okay, he's just going through each product and he's just like, yes. And he was like, so let's tell me again, which of these brands you're making the most money off of? I'm like, this brand. He said, I'm gonna ask you again. Now tell me again. So he's like, now why are you not doing more things in this brand? Why are you doing this? And I'm like, makes sense. You know, and he was like, his industry is water. And you, so he's like, listen, he said, guess what I made? He said, I've sold two companies for like $5 billion each. He said, you know what they both were? He was like, water. He said, you know what I want to make again? I was like, what? Water.
It's like, if it's not broke, why are we doing all these things?
And I was going to talk to my solution. Our model's a little bit different. I said, you know, I got to have a little bit of some variety. But I felt where he was coming from. He was like, listen, you make this thing harder for yourself. You know what I mean? You know what's selling? This product, this wellness, health and wellness is in demand. He's like, and you making this popcorn because? I'm like, because they like it?
Popcorn?
I know.
No, that's so real. But I think what you're really saying is something that is really important for people to hear, which is like, sometimes what we want to do is not always the thing that makes you the most money. And I see this a lot when I coach and advise entrepreneurs. I ask them the same question. Well, let's just look at your transaction data for the last 6 months. And let's just look at it.
Yeah.
You know, well, which product made you the most money? And oftentimes the product that makes them the most money is the one that no longer excites them.
Yeah.
And so they're like, well, so how much time are you spending on that? And versus how much time are you spending on this other thing that you make how much on? That girl, that is not enough. Why are we over there at all?
And that means you're literally taking money out of what, you know what I mean? Like, so if you're saying like, this is an area that we make the most, right?
Yeah.
But I'm putting more time into this. Then technically you're taking money out of this.
Yes. This you know is what I mean? Me saying this.
Exactly. Exactly. So you can't spend most of your time here. And again, the same thing, I do master classes and, you know, people really want to put their time into the things and I get it. Trust me, I do. But I also think as an entrepreneur, you hear me say, you know, sometimes you got to do what you have to do so you can do what you want to do later.
That's right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's not always about just doing those things that you absolutely love. I mean, running a company, I'm sure even with your company, the things that's the really just driving it, those not the most exciting things. Like, you know,
I want to shut down so many things that I'm like, oh man, I love, like, you've been to Summit 21 or heard of Summit 21. Like, Summit 21 was amazing. It was so beautiful. It was a Black women's conference in Atlanta. Like, all of the best women who are thriving as entrepreneurs, like, people were being speakers for the first time. It was just such a beautiful experience. It did not make enough profit, like, compared to, like, Afrotech, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, it's the same amount of effort. It's the same operating team. This makes 100x what this makes.
I know.
You can't justify it, you know, no matter how much it's good for the soul.
I know. That, to be transparent, that's why I haven't done another boss conference yet. I said, you know what? When I come to the conclusion, I said, Courtney, because you know me, I'll do things myself.
Yes.
So I did the two boss conferences we did, I did them totally myself. Not an outside sponsor, not one sponsor.
I remember asking you this.
I know. And why it was what it was, like, I'm like, girl, you cannot justify this thing. So for me, it's about, okay, and it's a twofold. Like, I was aware getting off into it, like, what we were and what not, you know, going to make. But I also wanted to build it in a way, once it was time for me to take that leap and say, okay, I do want some sponsors. I've built it in a way that now I have the credibility. Now I have the, you know, things of that nature. So I did take that into consideration. So I tell people, listen, if you're not in the event space, please don't just do this thing just because you want to. Either know that, listen, for us, you're going to use it as marketing, or you got to do your homework because it's not what you think.
Well, people look at the events that we do and they look at, you know, your event, they look at Create Cultivate, they look at all these things and they say, well, they wouldn't be doing it if it's not making money. And that's not true.
That's not true.
You wouldn't be doing it if it wasn't making anybody. Hear it from me first.
I know. Didn't make a dime. You didn't even know how much that I went on these conferences.
Yeah, you do it for other reasons, right?
Yes. Like,
Summit 21, although our intention was to make money, and it did have revenue, that doesn't mean I had a profit.
Right. Oh, yeah. We had major revenue. Right. And that's the bad part that you don't even want to articulate, because at the end of the day, people are still spending their hard-earned money.
Yeah.
So you never want to be like, oh, like, this is not enough. But it's like, there's no way I could put on an event of this magnitude by just selling the ticket price. Like, there's no way. Like, of course, we made money, but there was no profit.
Not the time value of the energy and the customer service and all the things.
Not the bank account value.
That's right. And I mean, so many people ask me, well, I want to make the so-and-so for so-and-so. And I'm just like, no, trust me. If you saw the numbers, you wouldn't want to do it. Just because we get on stage and we take pictures, does that mean we're making money? Okay.
Here we go.
And I just...
Crazy. You got to be little crazy to be an entrepreneur. And you got to be even a little bit more crazier to be a successful entrepreneur. So keep that in the back of your mind.
That's right. And we fail way more than you know. Now, you know, obviously AfroTech does fine, but...
Yeah.
We had to go through a variety of things. I mean, I could tell you 10 events Blavity has done. We did these one events. It was such a cute idea. We had photo shoot parties. We were trying to like basically bring Black creators together, and they would pay an entry fee, and then we would have a photographer there, and then we would have all these influencers and take all their pictures for them. That didn't work. We tried that 3 times, you know? We did AfroTech executives, right? We had these amazing retreat executives. They work, people are there, but it's really hard. It's really hard to do it's really hard to do a mid-size event, basically, is my point of view. You can do a free event or a cheap event and get a lot of people there, happy hours, things like that. We do those all the time. We don't even promote them anymore. We do them so much. Then you've got the big scale, 5,000 people or more, in my opinion, because that's when you can get the sponsors. But in that 200 to 4,000 range.
Yeah.
The math is very difficult.
Girl, then we had hotel rooms. I'm like, what was I thinking?
A block. I mean, I was grateful for the Miami hotel room. It was quite nice.
We had a good time. We had a good time. That's what mattered today.
Yes. If anything, you can know that it brought a lot of women closer together.
Yes, yes. And then, you know, I do have people that hit me up. You know, a lot of people who say, Courtney, listen, I know how to do sponsor. I know how to. Please work with me next time. So I'm, again, grateful for that. But at the same time, like I said, you know, they can see us now. Now they can reach out and say, because they've seen what we've done. So I would say mission accomplished, at least on that end.
Facts. Well, I want to end on something that I also really admire you for, which is your clique of women that you work with and collaborate with. Tell me about how you found this group of entrepreneurial women who are, you know, sharing your values and also building businesses. I think so many of us operate in silos and operate from a lonely place and also a bit territorial, perhaps. Mm-hmm. How did you build this group of girlfriends?
I would say some of them, which is interesting, because one always tells the story. She was like, I'm not going to lie, Courtney. She was like, I thought you wanted something. She was like, we're in the same industry. She was just like, she can't be reaching out to help me. She was like, no one has ever reached out to help me, especially someone in my same industry.
Mm.
And I knew she was going into retail stores. I knew the journey that I just took. I knew I had no one who told me what to do, what not to do. And I just felt like, I don't know, like I needed to reach out to her. Like, well, where are you in this process? You know? Mm-hmm. And she was like, I was real like skeptical.
Oh,
like,
no.
She was like, something ain't right. And she was like, the crazy thing, she was just like, and you reached out to help me. Like, I made sure that she knew what time it was. I'm like, when you go to this retailer, this is what you need to look for. And when you do this, like literally gave them the rundown. So for me, I really vibe with people who are authentic, because at the same time, you know, we're in all kinds of rooms. Like I am all kinds of rooms, but I really vibe with people who are themselves and who truly care. You know what I mean? And when I'm in those rooms that other people can't get in, I'm constantly like, okay, well, how do I get that girl who can't get in this room, in this room? Like that's my mission, right? Mm-hmm. Again, you know, these are, you know, a lot of bootstrap entrepreneurs who understand, because it's a difference, you know what I mean? Like now, you know, starting this company, you know, of course we got an advantage now, but you know, starting from the ground, a lot of people don't understand that. What does it take? And that's why I said you got to be a little bit crazy, because you're believing in something that doesn't exist. That's what I mean. Mm-hmm. When I say got to be a little bit crazy. Like there's no hindsight of success. And this is why you'll never hear me say I'm doing stuff for money, because money is the last thing that's going to come. Mm-hmm. We literally said we just put on these big conferences and these big things, and not a dime. So mm-hmm. there's no way I could have done that for money. You mm-hmm. understand what I'm saying? So to be around people who understand that, you know, is something that I truly appreciate. I love diversity. So I love pulling people in the room of all different walks of life, because that gives a true representation of what is. And there's always room to grow. If you're hearing the same thing from the same people, what are you learning?
Yeah.
But to be able to diversify and work with different people and to spend my, you know, because I tell you now, at this point in my life, I'm real territorial of my time. You yeah. know what I mean? So, yeah. and it has nothing to do with what a person have or not, but if you appreciate it, like I could sit and work with you all day, you know, mm-hmm. if I'm like, this person really, truly appreciates mm-hmm. it. Like that energizes me. Mm-hmm. But when some people who just don't care and just, you know, that's a difficult
one. Yeah, I feel that. And I think being an entrepreneur, especially being a woman entrepreneur, it is important that we have a tribe. I mean, my girlfriends, Melissa Butler, Hope Wiseman, you know, Carlene Roy, you know, these are people who, yes, we're kicking it, but I'm also like, send me your deal terms.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's
mm-hmm.
going on over there? You know, like Carlene, I'm like, what should I price this? Like, we're doing this thing. How much should I be spending on like production? You know, right. and just being able to call someone or text someone without, they know I don't have to be like, hey girl, how you doing today? What we doing? I don't know. I'm like, no. I just need you to answer this one question. I'm gonna call you back. And then we can talk about all the things, you know,
right, exactly.
you have people that you can just vibe with, I think it's just been so helpful for me. And also sometimes I'm like, okay, let's not talk about work. Like, let's just go to the spa and just kick it and like not.
Yes, for sure.
Be women for just 2 seconds and not boss. Sure.
And then, you know, you motivate. I remember that, you know, at the end, well, the 2019, I was trying to, you know, everybody trying to close the end of the year. It's like December. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, listen, now I'm trying to get, you know, X amount in, you know, for the end of the year. And somebody like, well, shoot. Let me get out. Let me go do some more work, because you know what I mean? So it like, you know, it fires all of us. You know what I mean? But it's cool
right.
because like I said, you know, you're not alone. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter who's doing what on what level. Like we're all trying to do the same thing. We're all trying to feed our family. We are trying to, you know, put our mark on this world, do the right thing. And as you said, just to be able to be around people who can relate is definitely priceless.
Yeah. So anyone listening in, if there's people in your world that are entrepreneurs that are at the same level of you or a couple levels above or a couple levels below, don't hesitate to just reach out to them or just send a DM that just says like, hey, watching what you're doing, like here to support, like.
And people vibe with that. Cause I think me and you, we both hop at each other, like DM, what you doing? Can you do this? Can you do what I mean? Like, yeah. And I think that's important, and don't just do it, you know, just whatever, you know, like, keep those relationships, you know, and I think that's important, but don't be afraid to reach out. Like we're all those same little girls who we were in middle school,
that's right.
in high school, like nothing has changed. We're just bigger versions. So ours is, again, you know, if a person you think is cool, like, let me just reach out to the person. They seem pretty cool. And it's either it is or it's not, you know, but there's nothing you're going to lose from it, you know, but I love, you know, like I said, being around people who can understand. So.
Agree. All right, Courtney, how can people connect with you and how can they connect with Obali if they're interested in working with you?
So definitely. So Courtney Adeleye is my social media and any website. I try to keep the same name. Same thing with Obali. Definitely check it out. So,
oh my God, I've been saying it wrong this whole time. Sorry to the world. Don't be like me.
It's a little bit light. But yeah, so Obali.com and then all social media platforms as well too. So we would love to work with as many people and, you know, share our amazing products too.
Incredible. Well, don't be like me. Say things right. Courtney, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Y'all definitely watch this episode on YouTube and on social, because Courtney and I are very animated. So if you're listening to this, you probably missed some of the things we were saying. So definitely run it back if you haven't subscribed to the YouTube channel or follow our page on Instagram. And thank you so much for listening to this episode. And Courtney, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it as always.
Thanks for listening to the Journey Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you leave a review and head to our Instagram and YouTube to leave a comment. I look forward to hearing how this podcast has made an impact on your own journey.